This is the Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by Light Up Media Group. Now, your host, former USA Baseball National Team coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome, everybody, from the Inside Pitch. We welcome everybody from around the world. We are currently in the Czech Republic at the Mountain Clinic in Ostružná, Czech Republic. The Coaches Clinic is in cooperation with the International Sports Group and the Czech Republic Baseball Association. This is a great thrill. We've got over 200 coaches that are currently at the coaching clinic, and we've got some outstanding speakers that the International Sports Group has brought in. And currently, I'd just like to introduce a couple of them and just tell you just briefly a little bit about the coaching clinic. And first of all, we're going to start off with Jim Jones, the former president of the International Sports Group and also a current board member. Jim originally started with the ISG and has traveled all over the world and seen baseball from different perspectives. So I'd just like to ask Jim what his thoughts are on the clinic, and then we'll go on to our next speaker.
Well, it's a great pleasure for me to be back here. I started my international travels back in 1991 in Czechoslovakia, and so I've seen a lot of growth and expansion of baseball. We've got, like you say, a large number, one of the largest clinics we do in Europe, and that's come a long way from when we started off early and having, you know, 15 or 20 coaches and clinics.
And another great speaker that we've got at the coaching seminar is Chris Carminucci, the professional scout with the Arizona Diamondbacks, and we're going to get Chris's opinion and also on the coaching clinic.
Well, good morning, Peter. Thank you for having me. It's been a great experience here. You know, many groups come out and say they want to learn more about baseball, but this group really has jumped in and wants to learn and has asked a lot of great questions. There's been a lot of great fellowship going on, and we look forward to another day of it today.
Thank you, guys. We really appreciate it. We're getting ready. It's breakfast time, and we're about to go over to another location to start the coaching clinic. Last night, we were with some of the coaches talking after the clinic about some of the drills and skills that we were discussing. It's a lot of fun. We're looking forward to it. And after this, we will be back with our special guest. So welcome to the Inside Pitch, and we'll see you in a few minutes. Welcome back to Prague, Czech Republic. We are done with the clinic. It's been an outstanding day. I want to welcome everybody to the Inside Pitch. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Also, as we welcome everybody around the world, please remember we're listening to our show today, and today's show is brought to you by Audible.com, a great resource for audiobooks. Get a free audiobook download and a 3-day free trial at audible.com/insidepitch. There are over 180,000 titles you can choose from your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP player. You know, as you always follow the show, we have coaches from all over the world, and we're excited to be here in Prague, Czech Republic, and we're going to start the show right away. So let's introduce our guest, Chris Carminucci, Arizona Diamondbacks professional scout. And our topic for today is going to be the life and day of a professional scout. You know, what do scouts do daily? How do they... when they're looking for players, what kind of players are they looking for? What are they looking for? And also professional players. There's a lot of professional players that they've got to look at for trades and other things. So, you know, we're going to ask Chris all these details. And not to mention a very hot topic, something that's very important in the scouting world right now, that's scouts and cybermetrics. You know, where does that balance? You know, is one more important than the other? Are they both equal? We don't know. So we're going to ask one of the top professional scouts in the business. So right now, I want to welcome my good friend for many years and a great individual, Chris Carminucci. Chris, how you doing?
Good, Pete. It's great to be here. It's been an exciting trip, and just excited to be sitting here with you and being able to talk some more baseball.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's get into it right away and talk baseball, because we had a great weekend this weekend, you know, with a lot of coaches. We had over close to 200 coaches in Prague, and I want to get your perspective. You've done a couple of these now for the International Sports Group, and get your perspective what you thought of the coaches in Prague and the whole weekend.
Well, first of all, Pete, I have to say it was a pleasure being able to speak next to you. I mean, you're one of the best speakers in the world, and I've gotten to hear you several times, and I learn something from you every time I get to do this, so it's great. But, you know, I think the greatest thing for me is the fellowship and the togetherness that we get to you know, be a part of when we're doing a clinic like this. You know, I think baseball is a community of people that needs to, you know, help each other around the world. It's not just in the United States. It's everywhere. And by doing these, we get to not only help young coaches, we get to, you know, be part of the greater good of building, you know, a better humanity. And what better way to do it than through the greatest game there ever was and in baseball?
You know, and for your coaches out there, you know, I know Chris gave me a great compliment. You know, I slipped him a little five underneath the table here just to get that compliment in there. But Chris and I have known each other for a long time, and we really respect each other. And that's the reason I got him on the show, because here in Prague, Czech Republic, he spoke on hitting, he spoke on motivating players, and he also talked about, you know, scouts, because there's a lot of international scouts that cover, and Chris does cover international baseball also. But let me go back to the coaches a little bit before we get into the scouting. What was your perspective of the coaches you talked to after the clinic, you know, after you're done talking about the topic? You know, what kind of, were they energetic?
Oh, you know, very much so. And, you know, you never really know what to expect when it comes to, you know, international coaches. You know, like you said before, you know, I've been around, I've done, you know, several of these now. And, you know, every country is different in their acumen and their understanding of the game. But I have to tell you, here in the Czech Republic, and in particular, the coaches that I got to speak to at the clinic, they were extremely knowledgeable, extremely excited, extremely motivated. I mean, this is a country that's on the come. It's on the way up. And I think the baseball here is only going to continue to get better. I want to be a part of that. And as I told these coaches, I want them to stay in touch with me. And if there's things that I can do to help them, I want to do it. I want to be a part of, you know, helping that first Czech big leaguer to get there.
Yeah, that'd be great for Czech Republic. You know, they've got, you can tell they've got the mentality. And, you know, something I saw in them was that while you were talking that, you know, they're extremely focused. You know, like their attention span is incredible. I'm not sure where that comes from. You know, we talked about it, you know, I said, you know, I'm not sure if they're faking it, but I don't think they were, because they really wanted to learn. What were some of the things that they wanted to learn about? I mean, we talked about several topics. Was there any questions you got that you thought, you know, was interesting?
You know what? I mean, I got questions from all over the gamut. You know, I mean, there were questions from, you know, when's the time to hit and run, to, you know, hitting technique. And I have to say, though, I thought mainly the questions really came down to technique. When it came to hitting, that I got a lot, and but also in, I've got several questions on, you know, dealing with players, you know, how to motivate young players, how, because, you know, we all go through this, no matter what sport you're coaching or scouting or what have you. You know, players these days have a tremendous amount of other things they can be doing, and let's call them distractions. And, you know, coaches from around the world want to know, how do we keep our kids motivated? How do we keep them interested? How do we keep them, you know, striving to do better? And, you know, I think what we came up with is, you know, by doing these types of clinics and by getting new information, what we can do is we can share that new information with these players and thus keep their attention span and keep it new and interesting. I think when you get stagnant, I think you start to lose a lot of what you're trying to build. And these coaches, what I loved about them is they want to know what to do next. They don't want it to get boring. They don't want it to get old. They wanted to know what to do next.
You know, what was interesting, too, that I caught on was that the you know, they asked questions, and all of a sudden, because you were talking about the scouting topic, and they asked some interesting, you know, they were really interested in how do we get our players looked at more, or what are they looking at? Is that something you talked to them about?
Absolutely is something I talked to them about. You know, I'm going to tell you is that most people don't understand what we as scouts are looking for. And, you know, again, Pete, there's many different kinds of scouts. You know, there are scouts that, you know, just scout amateur players, high school and college. And I always give them the utmost credit for having to project a player that's maybe, you know, 14, 15, 16, 17, or 18, and say this player is going to be this when he's 25, 26. You know, I give those guys so much credit. I don't do that kind of scouting. For me, I'm a professional scout, so I'm always looking at professional players, okay? And internationally, you have to almost look at these types of players that you see the Czech Republic and in Italy and all that. I almost view them like professional players, okay? Because there's not as much high school sports here. You know, they're playing on club teams, which are really run in a lot of ways like a minor league system, you know? And you get to really understand where they're coming from. And the question of how do we get that our players to the big leagues comes up all the time, Pete. I mean, all the time. And I think here it came up. And the answer was simply a lot of times they need to play more and they need to play against better competition. And, you know, I think we built on that. And along with good technique, I think they can get there.
Yeah, I think it was interesting because they were interested in, you know, how do we get our kids signed or, you know, the question is now, let's take Europe since you talked about it briefly. Let's look at what age, you know, how young are international scouts looking at players?
You know, I know international scouts that are looking at players at 13, 14, 15, you know, and I think you have to, you know, take it from there. And, you know, obviously you're not going to say, I'm going to sign a 13-year-old and put him in double A, you know, that's not going to happen. But what you're doing is you're looking for that 13 or 14-year-old, you know, that will project out. And then when he's 16, 17, 18, and you can, you know, you'll be able to sign him, you can really, you know, get a jump start on it. I mean, look at Alex Liddy. You know, we always talk about him.
From Italy.
From Italy. And, you know, Pete knows this. I'm a big fan of Alex and the way he plays the game and how he's improved over the years. But it also took Alex a number of years in the minor leagues and some failure to be able to get to where he is now. And if you don't know, I mean, Alex had a tremendous year last year at Double-A for the Kansas City Royals. He'll probably be in Triple-A and the big leagues this year. I would project him going, you know, being what we call an up-and-down type of player where he goes up for a bit, comes back, you know, when the needs come up. But you know, again, the earlier you can see a player, the better a lot of times. And the more you can project them out and say what they're going to be when they're 17, 18, 19, it'll help.
You know, I was thinking when you said Alex Liddy, you know, it brought to mind that he's playing for a friend of mine in Mexico right now, Eddie Diaz, who has an interesting career, another great manager like yourself. Because we didn't mention this. You managed professional baseball, and I believe you said you were involved in over 14 championships, which is, you know, I should have mentioned at the beginning of the show, but I bring that up because you and Eddie Diaz have a lot in common and with championships. Eddie, in 5 years, won the Caribbean World Series twice, along with three Mexican World Series in 5 years. And is also an international scout, so it's interesting how that comes about. But when we go back to the players, let's talk about this. You got the European players. Now you're looking at a 15, 16, you know, like you said, different age. But now you got to compare that player to an American player, a Venezuelan, a Dominican, kids from all over the world. You know, how easy is that and how's that done?
Yeah, you know, and Pete, that's a great point because, you know, a lot of times people are asking me about their European player and they're only looking at them playing against European players. You know, I have to look at it from a different angle. I have to look at it that, you know, these players, how do they project out against the world?
Right.
You know, and that's, you know, that's difficult to do a lot of times because, you know, my biggest knock against European baseball is that they don't get to play enough games. Be against the best competition all the time, and you know, if you took a Czech player and you put him in, I'm just going to pick up a Florida or Texas, a hotbed for baseball, Georgia, Arizona, and you said, hey, you know what? For the next 8 years, you're going to get to play against some of the best players in the country. Boy, oh boy, you're going to see that Czech player really, you know, grow and become a heck of a player, I'm sure. But you know, unfortunately, that's just not the way it is. So what you have to do is you have to basically when you sign a European player, in my opinion, you have to say, what are they going to be right now? And then what are they going to be in another? I always add about another 4 years on top of it. I'll give you an example. Marcus Solbach. Okay. Marcus was a player from Germany that was signed by the Twins. And I don't know how much of a signing bonus he got at the time. Twins signed him young, I think 16. And, you know, he got released when he was 20 and maybe 21. And I saw him pitching in an independent league and went down to see him. I remember going down to see him in Washington, Pennsylvania. He was pitching for the Windy City Thunderbolts against the Washington Wild Things. Some great names, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, in these independent leagues. But I see Marcus started the game. I see him throw six innings, shutout. Big, strong kid. But I signed him right on the spot. And Marcus has been now an all-star 2 years in a row for us in low A ball and then in A ball as well. So, you know, what I'm really saying to you is it's not always the Major League team that signs an international player first. Sometimes it's a Major League team that gets him second. The joke that we always have is that, when it comes to an international player, is that, you know, they really, really, really need to just get their sea legs in the United States, and you can take what they do the first 2 years and throw it out the window. You know, it doesn't matter if they hit 050 or 010. You're not going to really see the best out of them until they spend 2 to 4 years in a professional organization and in a professional environment. Some will get it, some won't. But the guys that are getting it are becoming, more frequent.
Well, you know, let's talk about this because the show's a lot about, you know, thinking outside the box. You know, we talked about it this weekend. You know, challenging a little bit the status quo and not always doing the same thing all the time. Let's take that young man. Great comment you said, and you said it at the clinic too, about them having to, they have to play against top competition. So in order for you to sign him, you know, or even decide to sign him, he hasn't played against top competition. You know, he's not going to be able to do it. How's he going to do that? How's a way that all these kids from Europe have an opportunity to play against top competition, where then you can see them? Is that coming to the States? Is that, you know, what, is there something out there that maybe is not done right now or could be done? It might be outside the box right now. It might be a wacky idea for now, which people may think, but it could be eventually a pretty good idea.
You know, I think my answer to the question is kind of twofold. One is, I think Major League Baseball needs to do a much better job of getting European players over to the U.S. to play. And I don't mean paying for them to go over. What I'm talking about is maybe creating more environments in the U.S. in which international tournaments could take place.
Now, question for you. Do they need visas for that? Or, like, each team have so many visas? How does that work, I guess?
Well, if we signed them, they would need visas, okay? Right. But if they're just coming over to showcase themselves, see, in the U.S., I think one thing that we've done very well is the creation of these showcase teams.
Sure.
We talked about it the other day that we have all these different companies now that do a Perfect Game and all that stuff. And, you know, while some people will say, oh, boy, there's too many of them, I think it does a great job of showcasing these young people to scouts like me and amateur scouts and all that. So what I think needs to happen is I think we need to create an environment where once, twice a year, maybe it's three times a year, these European players come over, play against Americans, and you know what? It's going to be ugly in the beginning. You know what I mean? This is a marathon, not a race. You know, they're going to get their butts kicked a little bit, you know, and then, a few more years will go by and they'll get better and better and better. Look, I mean, look at what's happened with the Japanese players, okay? You know, they used to come to the U.S. and play us, and it was no big deal. Now they're coming here and they're beating us, okay?
Yes.
We're going there and they're beating us because they were working so hard at it. And again, like I said before, it's going to be a progression and they're going to have to build into it. But I think we need to for the betterment of the game, create an environment and maybe it's two tournaments a year, three tournaments a year, where the best players in Europe come over and they play in the United States and get a chance to be able to get against the best competition, okay? So
I think that would be great. I hope that comes to that because then I think we'll start seeing even more European players in professional baseball. All right, let's jump into what we discussed was one of the topics was let's start with what does a scout do? You know, from the first time you start scouting, what's your first thing you have to work on?
It's funny if you were to ask a scout this, 30 years ago, before cell phones and computers and all that stuff, you'd hear a much different answer, because back then there were handwriting reports and having to really just look at the newspapers and search around for players that were good. You know, we are very fortunate. I'm very fortunate that I'm in an environment where there's not a lot of secrets anymore. My day looks like this, okay? And it's really two or threefold. One is one part of my job is to cover our own minor league system, okay? And Mike Bell, who's our minor league director, and I talk all the time. And I look at our players, write reports on our existing players. I also will give suggestions on places where we can possibly improve. And if we are lacking a player, I will go out and find that player to sign to fill that uniform. platform and be able to help us to be able to win, you know, at whatever particular level we have the need. And, you know, that happens quite a bit. And, you know, the places that I go most of the time to find these players of need are these independent leagues, these independent professional leagues. And, you know, for you, those people that are listening that, you know, say, I don't know much about those independent leagues, I'm going to give you a really quick, you know, 1 minute idea of what an independent league is. An independent league is a professional league that basically, you know, pays the players to play. They play against games. It's a separate, they play against the other teams within that league. And they basically are property of that league, okay? And then Major League teams like myself can come in, and Major League scouts like myself can come in and buy a player from that team and put them in your own system, okay? It happens all the time. There have literally, ladies and gentlemen, been thousands of players that come out of independent leagues that have made it to the big leagues now. I mean, it's that common. And, you know, we use it a lot to be able to put players in our organization. So I spend, you know, probably 50-60% of my time out there trying to fill spots. Again, whether it be by an independent league or by a free agent that was maybe not signed in college, okay? One thing you have to realize, ladies and gentlemen, is that, you know, we used to have 62 rounds, 61 rounds. I forget exactly what it was at the time. There's only 40 rounds in the draft now. So you're talking about another, you know, 700-800 players that, two or 300 players that do not get signed anymore. So when a need comes up, you don't have the excess players to be able to, that player pool to be able to grab from. You have to go find these players. So, you know, you're talking about having to sign a kid that might have been at some school that didn't get enough attention, and now I can go in, sign him, and what he's doing is he's helping us to win at whatever level we send him to.
Yeah, and so independent ball fills that niche, a great niche.
Absolutely.
Now, you go to a ballpark, but now there's specific things you got to look for. So maybe let's break it down a little bit. Let's look at a position. Let's look at a pitcher. There's a need for pitching. You know, now what are you looking for? How do you look for it? Give us the insides a little bit. Because it might help some of our coaches understand. I know this is the professional level, but I'm sure it's going to relate to younger kids in some ways, what you look for.
Well, you know, it really does differ, okay, what I look for, because when I'm looking at an independent league, okay, an independent league player, I'm looking for a specific person to fill a specific need that we have. Okay, let's say we need pitching, okay? And if I'm looking for a pitcher, look, anybody that tells you they're not looking for some velocity is lying, okay?
Yeah.
You know, that radar gun is an important thing, okay? I wish it wasn't the case. But again, you know, we really can't – I can't put a pitcher that's throwing 82 miles an hour in a high A situation. He's going to get his brains beat in. That's not
– You know, and Stan, just for a second, because I agree with you. I'm sure most people do, most coaches that understand the game. But let's talk about – let's give some people out there that are moms and dads and players – who sometimes don't understand it. Why does a kid that's thrown 82 not have a chance at that young age or at that young level?
You know, 82 miles an hour, even 85 now, okay, it's below the hitting speed, okay? And sometimes that can give a hitter fits, let's face it, okay? That's why the changeup's so effective. But at the same time is, okay, these are quality professional hitters, okay? A-ball hitters now aren't what they were 15 years ago. I mean, these kids are good, okay? And they were good then, but they're even better now is what I'm saying. And 82 miles an hour, 85 miles an hour, it's going to get hit. And it's going to get hit, and it's going to get hit hard. And the reason is players are so much better now at making adjustments, okay? They can stay back longer. They can, you know, utilize their hands much better now. Their hips are stronger. Physically, they're bigger, stronger players. It's I'm not going to say it can't be done, but it's tough, Pete.
I remember as a player because, you know, my bat speed, I could be honest, was pretty bad. So I would rather face that 82. As soon as that guy came in, it was 89, 90. There's no way I was going to catch up to that. And I couldn't look for, I mean, if I looked fastball, yeah, an 89, 90, then all of a sudden he threw an off-speed pitch, 10 miles of difference, I'm done. If that guy threw 82, it wouldn't matter because I knew that's all he can throw was 82, so I could hit either pitch. So I get what you're saying. I just want to make sure the parents and coaches out there, some of them, that may think, how come my son can't play at that level? Well, that's one of the reasons. So now let's go back to the pitcher. You're looking for specific things in that person, filling a need. What else are you looking for?
You know, I'm looking at overall stuff, okay? I'm looking for a plus 90 fastball. I'm looking 95 and above as possible. If he's a closer, I need another quality pitch. A slider, a curveball, a cutter is very prevalent now. Okay, if he's a starter, I need three quality pitches. I need a fastball, an off-speed pitch sometimes, and a changeup, you know, of some kind. You know, so I need three quality pitches. And what it comes down to is pitchability, Pete. And for those out there that don't understand what pitchability is, pitchability means he can go into a game and he can get outs, okay, not only with his stuff, but his ability to command his stuff. And, you know, look, just because you have a 90-mile-an-hour fastball or 95-mile-an-hour fastball, if you throw it down the middle of the plate, it's going to get hit. You've got to be able to throw it on the corners. You've got to be able to mix in your pitches. You've got to be able to throw any of your pitches on a 3-2 count with the bases loaded, you know, two outs, winning run on third base, okay, and a walk loses it, okay? You have to have that kind of ability at every level of the minor leagues now.
And, you know, now, let's say he's got the stuff, but how do you know what he's got inside? How tough is this kid? You know, what's his background? You know, how smart is he? You know, how does he deal with pressure, all that? How do you find all that information out?
Well, you know, that's where the detective side of being a scout comes in. You know, we've got to talk to their coaches. We've got to talk to the other players around them, other scouts. You know, I've gone so far as to call the guy's little league coach, to call the guy's teacher at high school, call their athletic director. I want to find out as much information as I can about these guys. Now, truth be told, I'm going to tell you this. So most of the kids, okay, are great kids. Most of the kids want this, okay? Most of the kids that you deal with are kids that are just, you know, like we were, Pete, you know, that really, you know, want to play this game and want to play at a high level and will do anything they can to get there. But also, truth be told, if you come across a guy that's not a good teammate from time to time that you don't want to put in your system, you know, maybe he's a real selfish kind of a guy. And, you know, we've got to be careful of that, especially with a guy that is coming into our system. And, you know, we're throwing him in, say, mid-season. We can't put a what we would call a clubhouse cancer in the middle of it. It could ruin the whole ball club. You know, I mean, look, at the end of the day, you know, the way a person acts and the way he fits in with his teammates, there's a direct correlation there between how the team does. And, you know, like people will tell you that it doesn't matter, but I think it does. And you know, that team chemistry is important. So, you know, we have to be really careful about that.
Let's get it on with Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock.
I don't know who the guy is with the button that's giving credit for significant strikes, but I'm going to tell you right now, he's an idiot. I went back and watched that fight multiple times. In the third round, Carlos threw approximately 80 strikes, while Robbie Lawler threw about 25. But it doesn't matter if you're throwing 80 when 75 to 80% of them missed. Hit glove, hit arm, missed completely. You don't get credit for that. That's nothing.
Let's get it on. Only on the Lineup Media Group. Youth Baseball Talk with Jim Cromer.
You coach some unbelievable pitchers. Did they all buy in?
Well, you know, it's like Glavin said, well, you know, my shoulder's been bothering me. When I first got there, he said, my shoulder's been bothering me a little bit. I don't know if I want to throw a couple times in between starts. I said, well, how much success have you had so far? And I said, why don't we be open-minded and give it a try? He fell in love with it. He ended up throwing more than any pitcher we had. But he would throw the day before the game.
Listen at youthbaseballtalk.com or download the show on iTunes or Stitcher. Youth Baseball Talk, only on the Lineup Media Group.
Now, obviously, we all use social media. I see players on there all the time. You know, how much is social media used to research players? Because, you know, you got young players, too, nowadays, high school, college guys. You know, they're just not thinking sometimes about, you know, what they're saying and doing on social media. How's that reflection upon players?
Oh, God, that's one of the things we do right away is we go to the Facebook pages, we try to Google them, we find out as much as we can because, you know, you don't want somebody that, you know, is saying awful things on their Facebook page to be a part of the clubhouse, you know. Now, we also understand guys make mistakes. You know, just because a player made a mistake when he was 17 or 18 doesn't mean that he's the same person now that he's 24, 25. I certainly am not the same person that I am at, now at 41 that I was at 18. You know, we all grow up. You know, I think back then we called it boys will be boys. boys, you know, but it's a different, probably different terminology now. But you know what? We don't give up on somebody, but we need to really know what's that person like now.
And where's the injuries come in? How do you know about a player who's injured? You know, maybe they're hiding it, or you know, how do you find all that out?
Well, you know, you've got to do your research on, you know, past injuries and things like that. But what it really comes down to, Pete, is they go through a really strict physical. Let's say I sign them on Friday. On Saturday, they're in Arizona getting their physical done, or they're with whatever minor league team we send them to getting a physical. And I've only had it done once, but we've had players not pass the physical before. So they have to really go through a number of different tests to make sure there's no underlying issues there. And doctors and technology are great, but they can't find everything. So sometimes you just don't know.
How about your hitters? Let's talk just briefly about the hitters. You know, now you need a hitter. You got a need, and you need a particular. Are you looking for a particular hitter? And what are you looking for in hitters?
Well, you know what? I mean, look, if he's a corner infielder or a corner outfielder, you're typically looking for power, okay? Especially at first base, third base, you know, obviously right and left. You're looking for guys that can hit and hit for power. Power, especially with the steroid age now long gone, it's not easy to come by. Power is actually very hard to find. So, you know, you may say, you may try to project a guy out. Well, you know, he hits a lot of doubles now, but I believe that, it's going to project out eventually where he's going to be able to hit some home runs. So that's for the detective side of it comes into play, and the projection side. One thing I can tell you is that, you know, one of our minor league teams is in Visalia, California, okay? It's a launching pad, Pete. I mean, you could put a guy in there that, you know, normally hits 30 doubles, and he ends up hitting now 25 home runs because he's getting the added help of the atmosphere there. So, you know, you got to take all that into consideration. But, we're not a high strikeout total organization. You know, we're the kind of organization that, you know, does want to see guys put the ball in play. We do believe the strikeout is an empty out. We'd rather see a guy, ground out to second base and move a guy from second to third with less than two outs and never strike out. So offensively, we're looking for power. We're looking for guys that can hit for average. But mainly in season, when I make an in-season sign like that, I'm looking for a guy that can drive in runs.
What happens if you have a player, whether it's a position player, a hitter, a pitcher, okay, whatever position it may be, you really like him, but, you know, he didn't look like he's in really good shape. He didn't take care of himself that well. You know, he may have some of these tools, whether it's bat speed or whether it's, running, but it's just his shape's not there. How do you handle that?
You know, a lot of times, I mean, look, I'm not going to sign somebody that physically is out of shape unless they're just an anomaly that can just flat out hit. But typically, you know what I'll do with those guys, Pete, is I will take them aside. I will make a point to go down in batting practice and say, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? And I've done that before where I take them aside and I say, look, I'd sign you right now, but you're in awful shape, okay? You can't get down the first baseline, but you can hit. You need to get your butt in the gym and work out. You need to get going a little bit. You know, I think we've become a society where, oh, we don't want to offend anybody because, I'm certainly not trying to give the kid an eating disorder. Okay, I'm not saying that. What I'm trying to do, though, is help him to be able to get signed. And you know what? Look on TV. Look in Major League Baseball. There's not a whole lot of guys that are heavy and out of shape. These guys are built like Tarzan now. You know, they're incredible. So, look, they don't have to go very far to see what the shape they need to be in. Now, I'm going to give you an example of somebody, of a hitter that I signed. Hitter's name is Iams. Last name is I. It's spelled like I James. And this young player was hit about 20 home runs one season in Washington with the Washington Wild Things in the Independent Leagues. Okay, he was in okay shape. I'm going to give him. I'm probably giving him a little bit by saying okay shape, but this kid could hit. So I signed him. Okay, and when I signed him, I said, look, okay, I'm signing you, okay, but the next time I see you, I'm going to be in to see you in a month, I expect you to be in great shape, okay? Stuart Iams is his name, okay? And this kid, next time I saw him, was in great shape, and he hit about 25 home runs for us, helped us win a championship at Hillsboro. He just got done playing down in Mexico, I believe he was playing. And so there's a kid that took it to heart. Oh, man, I do need to get myself in better shape. And you know what? His overall game picked up, and the way that he helped our organization, there was a direct correlation there, I think, between the kind of shape he got into and, what kind of hitter he became.
Like sometimes I go to games and I see whether it's, pro games or high school or college games, you got some players, they're always looking up in the stands, they're always looking for the scouts. I know why they're looking at up there, but, what recommendation do you have for players for that situation, but also during tryouts or games or practices, you know, how should they handle themselves? Do they handle themselves any differently because there's a scout there? Or is it, you know, usual? I mean, just daily things you should do all the time.
You know, I'm going to tell you this, is that, you know, because so many, these kids now grow up seeing so many scouts, okay? So I don't think that they should act any different when we're there. They should always play the game the right way, obviously hustle on and off the field, do those things. If a guy's playing differently just because there's a scout there, something's wrong with that player, okay? But I will say this, what I think players miss out on, okay, and I think this is partially some of us scouts, our own faults too as well, is players don't always walk up to us and talk to us. I suggest, and I always say this, if a scout's there to see you and or to see anybody, okay, and you see him and there's the opportunity to pull him aside and talk to him, do it. Okay, I can't tell you how many times I've had a player say, excuse me, sir, can I talk to you? And these guys are scared to death to talk to me. And I'm thinking, hey, man, come on over. And I'll tell them, come on over, sit down, let's talk. How you doing? What can I answer for you? You know, and because players need to understand what we're all about, okay? See, it's our job to figure out what the player's all about. But I think the players can find comfort in knowing what we're all about, too, you know? And, look, I was one of those guys that didn't go talk to the scouts. I just figured, hey, you know, I'm good enough. I'm going to get signed, and that's it. You know, I was a little bit of an arrogant young man, I admit it. You know?
And I was the opposite. I was scared to go talk to them, you know, because I just felt, you know, if I talked to them, they might look at me as, you know, when he's trying to brown nose the scout a little bit, you know, but I, they're not going to fall for that, obviously.
But what you just said is actually what the majority of players feel. They feel like, oh, my God, I shouldn't go up and talk to him. You know, he's this, he's that. I don't want to go over there. You know what? Stop that. Lose that kind of thinking and walk up and talk to a scout. Certainly, if you see me in the stand somewhere, okay, I'll give you an example, okay, is, you know, one of my jobs is to cover, also not only to cover Independence, our own organization, I also cover the Mexican League. I also cover Major League organizations and Major League teams and all that stuff. In a nutshell, it's my job to go wherever they send me to see players. And, you know, I was actually at a Mexican League game this past offseason. And, you know, if you guys are not familiar with the Mexican League, it's a Mexican winter league that is professional. And a lot of Major League players, but mainly minor league players, go down and play. And it's a very good league. But I was sitting with the father of a Mexican League player, and he said, he started asking me some questions. And I said to him, I said, well, why don't you have your son come over and talk to me? And he said, well, he would never do that. And I said, why? He goes, well, that would be rude. No, it wouldn't. That wouldn't be rude. Come over and talk to me. So actually, we got to talking, and I gave him some things, some suggestions that I have. And look, I don't act like I'm God. I'm giving my opinion for a living. And you know what? If it's something you think is important, take it and run with it. If you don't like it, no problem at all. It's not going to hurt my feelings. But ask the question.
All right, now we're coming down, not to the end, because we've still got one last topic that we want to talk about, but we are coming down to this particular one. What is there anything different? What can you tell players out there, coaches out there, parents? Is there anything different that you look at, other than all the typical things that a lot of scouts look for, that might be interesting to others, you know, that maybe other scouts don't look for? And it doesn't have to be on the field. It doesn't have to be about playing. It could be anything.
You know what, and I actually spoke about it a little bit here. You know, good players have a swagger to them. I know we were laughing because I don't think there was a Czech word for swagger, you know. So, but what I mean by that is, you know, a player that looks like he's been there a little bit, you know, that gets in the batter's box and has some confidence about him. You know, look, I'm going to say this as bluntly as I can on the radio here. Every good player, has a little bit of cockiness inside of them. And I don't mean that as a bad thing. What I'm talking about, there's a self-belief in there that when he gets in that batter's box, you know, he knows he's going to do well. He knows he's going to be able to hit whoever is out there, okay? And I'm not talking about a kid that's mouthing off to umpires and, you know, it's all about me and all. I'm talking about a kid that when he walks in there or walks up to the batter's box or he's in the outfield or whatever, he walks with a purpose. He has that look in his eye. I always tell the audiences when I'm at these things, you know, really good players look at you as a scout like they want to rip your head off. You know, they are really, you know, they're serious and they're ready to go. I love that. I look for that guy that is really confident in himself and really determined. And, you know, that coupled with athletic ability and all that stuff, you know, I mean, I think that's what makes up some of the greatest players in the world. You know, one example is, you know, look, Derek Jeter, great player, and probably one of the nicest people you've ever met. But on the field, he'd rip your head off. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's what he had inside of him. You know, Paul Goldschmidt, our first baseman, sweetest human being, everything else. But on that field, he'll take you down if you ask him. You know, and I respect that.
You know, that reminds me, you know, and you're naming guys, obviously, that are great players. I'm thinking about, first one that came to my mind, because I'm from Chicago, is Kyle Schwarber, who just came up. You know, so really nobody knew him from AA, I believe, and he looks like he's going to kill people. You know, so that, I see what you're saying there. Now, if that's very important, well, how important is how these kids dress or how they come to the field?
Well, and you know, I spoke to the Czech coaches about this, and it goes the same way for the players. Is that look, when you're you know part of a baseball team, you're not only part of a baseball team or an organization or part of the baseball community when you're at the field. Okay, you're part of that community in every walk of life. You have to take it seriously. You can't go out and you know and look bad or you know. And I always say this to the guys: look, when you go out, dress like you're representing your whole organization. You know, and you know, I'm not asking you to be in a suit and tie. But look, there's a way of handling yourself, and there's a way of handling yourself poorly, you know. And I think when you handle yourself properly, and you take pride in what you do, and you dress right to the ballpark, okay, you know, for us, a lot of major league teams don't have really strict dress codes when it comes to coming and going to the ballpark. But when they get on the bus, they do have it, okay? But, you know, most of the good players, they'll dress nice when they're coming in anyway, even when they're not told they have to. You know, it's just the right thing to do. And again, I'm not talking about a suit and tie. Hey, wear a nice, you know, polo shirt, a collared shirt, you know what I mean? You know, wear a pair of jeans that isn't, you know, ripped up all over the place, you know? You know, and again, just look presentable. And, you know, that does come into play. And you know what another thing is? I'll meet their parents a lot of times, you know, and parents out there, this is important for you to know. One of the worst things you can do as a parent is talk for your child. Talk, you know, I've had this happen to me so many times. I've had a father or a mother call me up, tell me all about their son, how great he is, everything else, how he's going to do it, and how I should sign him. And I always say to them, your son's 18 years old. He can go to war for his country. He can, you know, he can vote. Why are you calling me? You know, it's fine if you want to call me and say, hey, my son's going to be calling you. I'd appreciate it if you take his call. But, you know, look, don't be helicopter parents, okay? Look, you know, make these kids pull up their own pants and get to work. And, you know, really, really try to implore them to handle things and to talk to scouts like me. That's why I get back to what I said before, which is really trying to as a player, build rapport with as many scouts as you can and try to, you know, because every scout is looking for different things.
Was there anything that on the field, you know, you're at a ball game and you really like somebody, but all of a sudden now they just turned you off? You know, something happened. You just said, there's no way we're signing this guy.
Oh, yeah. I have seen, you know, one of the things I said before was that, you know, they have to be good teammates, okay? I've seen a guy hit a home run, okay, and walk around the bases, okay, not run, walk around the bases, okay, and not even shake his third baseman coach's hand, gets in the dugout, won't shake any of his players' hands, okay? And you know, and then I saw that same player. I thought, well, maybe that was just a, you know, he had a bad day. You know, normally I give a guy another chance. I saw him the next day hit a home run, and his own teammates wouldn't even shake his hand.
Wow.
Boy, oh boy, that's the kind of guy you don't want as a teammate. He's a real, that's a selfish guy. That's a guy you don't want to put in a clubhouse. So yeah, I've been about to sign a guy, one in particular that I'm talking about here, and it was actually out of the Mexican League, and I said, no, I'm not going to do this because it would have been a guy that could have become what we call clubhouse cancer.
All right, we are coming. This has been great. We're coming down to the stretch here, and one of the things we want to talk about, both myself and Chris, you know, we've got a couple friends, one that particularly played in a movie, Moneyball. You know, Ken Medlock was an outstanding person and AAA player and great pitching coach. It was with me on Team USA, and then Barry Moss was in that movie also, and I'm sure Chris knows a bunch of other guys. And I bring the movie up because I've read the book, you know, twice, and I've saw the movie, and I remember those times when it first started. So I want to talk a little bit about the industry and scouting and cybermetrics. You know, what's more important? Are they both equal? You know, let's just get right into it and, you know, tell us a little bit about that, how you deal with it.
You know, it's really become a war. You know, it's almost like scouts versus technology. You know, I mean, and baseball for that matter against technology. You know, and you know, my feeling on it is this. Okay, I am a scout. Okay, obviously, and I rely on my eyes. I rely on my instincts. I rely on what I was taught. I was taught, just so you know, because I mean, Pete, obviously, you're from Chicago. The man that taught me everything I know was a gentleman by the name of Bill Brick, who I still learn from every day. You know, Bill's 65 years old and is the greatest scout, the greatest human being I know. So I pay homage to him every day that I can. And, you know, I say that because that's how I learned to scout. It wasn't, you know, I didn't get a handbook. I didn't get I don't know if I'd watch a DVD. I learned from the guys that were there before technology was there. Now, with that, okay, is while I rely on my own eyes, while I rely on my own instincts, I would be a fool not to take into consideration all of the other avenues I have to get information about whatever person I'm going to see, whatever player I'm going to see. So I do look at, you know, stats as far as, you know, batting average and, you know, war and all those things, because I think it's another tool to make an educated decision. You know, look, you know, if somebody's going to try to do something in every other walk of life, they would be a fool, again, not to take every single thing that's at their fingertips and, you know, utilize it. But, Pete, we were walking back the other night, and I said this to you guys, is that I think stats for a scout and sabermetrics for scouts, it's better in the rearview mirror. And what I mean by that when I say that is it is better for me as a scout, or I think in general for any scout, to see the player with his own eyes, to get a feeling, to make almost make a decision in their head, and then look at all the other information that's out there, because I think information can skew you as a scout. You'll write a guy off, okay? I don't know if we have time, but I would tell the David Peralta story if I had a minute to do it.
Sure.
Do I have a minute to do it? Okay.
Yep.
So you know, David Peralta was an independent league player, and I'm going to give the real abridged version here.
Yep.
Very good independent league player that was sorted out as a pitcher, left-handed pitcher with the St. Louis Cardinals, was released, went home, decided, hey, I think I can hit. Went to an independent league and, you know, did very well. I went to go see him and ended up signing him, and we put him in high A, and from high A, within a matter of months, not years, this kid was in the big leagues, and he's been in the big leagues for the past 2 years, okay, and he hit over 300 this year with 18 home runs and 75 RBIs. That kid would have never gotten a chance if you just went by stats, because A, he was a little older, you know, B, this was a guy that was a left-handed pitcher signed by the Cardinals. You know, you're not going to give him any chance. But you know what, ladies and gentlemen, sometimes it's not about the numbers when it comes to picking a player. It's about this is one of those kids, like I mentioned before, that wants to rip your head off when he looks at you. It's about the determination. It's about how good the player is. But, you know, we don't want to make determinations strictly on sabermetrics. We want to utilize sabermetrics to help us to make the best decision possible. But for me as a scout, I utilize it after I see a player. That way I don't make a rash judgment on somebody just because their stats aren't good.
So there's been times where you saw a player, you know, and I got to believe, even as a scout, you know, there's got to be doubts in your mind sometimes. I mean, unless you're just perfect. When there's that doubt, now what do? You pull out those stats to see if maybe it brings you over the hump?
Yeah, you know, Pete, you know, I think you said something that I need to address too, is that, you know, you don't always as a scout, okay, know everything. Okay, we don't know everything. Okay, what we do is we make an educated decision. Okay, I would have told you when I first signed David Peralta that I thought he'd be a good organizational player. I didn't know he was going to make it to the big leagues and do what he did. So, you know, you a lot of times you're taking everything into consideration. You're saying, okay, my eyes tell me that this player is has a chance to make it to the big leagues. Okay, this guy can get into our system, and if he gets the number of at bats that he's going to get, I feel he's going to improve enough to be able to get to the big leagues. Okay, you think that in your head, then you take a look at the stats. Maybe you're seeing a trend the other way. Maybe you see him. Well, he started out in A ball one time and he hit 300, and then in Double A he hit 289, and then it went down and down and down. So you kind of see the the trend going in the other direction. So you really say, huh, you know what, I really got to take another look at this kid, okay, and see what was, does he, maybe is his bat not as quick? Let me take another look. Maybe does he struggle with really good fastball? So you kind of, you know, you don't want to second, I'm never second guessing myself, okay? But what I'm doing is I'm trying to take a look at all the information just to make sure that I'm not missing something that is right in front of me. Because, you know, you've heard that term, too close to the tree to see the branches.
Yeah.
You know, they look, I see thousands of players every year. And how you distinguish the better ones from the other is, I had a great, Bill Brick said this, and I think it was said by many other scouts before him, is that, you know, you see a whole bunch of players in black and white, and then you see that one player in color.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, I got him. I got him. Boom, I got him. That's right. You know, but those players that are in color are few and far between.
Yeah. You keep track of all this information that you have. You keep this, and then you go back to it. Have you maybe missed a play? Not missed a player, but said, no, we're not going to sign this player right now, but I keep all this information, and for some reason gone back a year later and signed him?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, that's happened to me before. I've also missed on players, too. Like, you know, scouts, that's the biggest thing. We hate to admit it when we miss on somebody, but I'm going to tell you quickly. There was a pitcher named John Holdscomb, okay, who I went to see on four separate occasions. I mean, this guy threw 98 miles an hour. Big, strong kid, was originally with the Mets. I never saw him throw a strike, but I saw, you know, a really good arm. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to sign him. I'm going to pass on this guy. Well, the Pittsburgh Pirates came in and signed him. That kid was in the big leagues within 6 months again. I could have had another one that was right there, you know. But I missed on him simply because I didn't trust in the fact that he was going to throw strikes. He proved me wrong. For you parents out there, you know, just because one scout doesn't like you, okay, prove him wrong. You know, tell your kid to prove him wrong. And you know what? I called up John after he got to the big leagues. I said, John, you know what? I missed you. And I said, that was on me. And he said, Chris, I could have told you you missed me at the time. He let me have it, rightfully so. But then after that, we laughed, and you know, we still stay in touch. And you know what? I won't miss him again.
Yeah.
You know, and I told him that. So.
And with sabermetrics and scouting, more teams are doing this now. They're using it. You know, maybe they're using both of them. Where do you see the industry going with it? Is this going to be it, or is there going to be more?
No, I think, you know, and I think that the game runs in cycles. So I think this is the cycle where you're going to see sabermetrics start to beat out good old-fashioned scouting for a little while. And then I think you're going to see it come back to, in a few years, back to really trusting the scouts again. Because no one thing is perfect. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, no one scout's perfect. No sabermetric is perfect. You know, major league organizations are hasty. You know, they're always looking for the new thing. You
right.
know, that's one reason why I love the Diamondbacks. You know, I mean, look, I get to go to work with Tony La Russa.
Yeah,
okay,
awesome.
I get to be with Dave Stewart. I get to be with Deshaun Watson. I get to be with Bill Brick. I get to be with guys that understand that, you know, it's not one thing that's going to make a winner. It's going to be a whole culmination of things. You know what I mean? And you got to go at every avenue. That's why, again, I'm here in the Czech Republic, because I want to go to every avenue to make sure we're not missing any players and make sure we're not missing any information.
All right, folks, we are coming to the end. I'm going to let Chris end this off in a minute here. I want him to talk about a little bit about if a coach, you know, there's a lot of coaches out there, and you told the international players, you know, the coaches, you know, anytime you see a player, let me know. What about all these other coaches out there in the U.S.? You know, what do they do? How do they do that with scouts? If they really, I mean, they're all going to want to give you a player. You listen to all of them, or you take all the information in? What do you recommend for coaches to do?
And I'm going to tell you, because I listen to every coach that calls me, okay? I told a story here that, you know, I went and worked at a player at an old folks home, you know? So
yeah, sure.
I'll go anywhere at any time to work them out, you know? I'll see anybody. But what mistakes, the biggest mistake that coaches make in the U.S. is they call you about every player. The biggest thing I can tell you coaches out there is educate yourself on what scouts look for. Educate on how much projectability comes into play, and educate yourself on, don't just recommend every guy, because what ends up happening is, you know, it's almost like the old story about crying wolf. You know, I get calls from the same coach all the time, who I won't name, college coach, that'll call me and say, these three guys got missed. And then I'll go see those players, and they're nowhere near where they need to be to sign a professional contract. And you know what? I don't really listen to that coach anymore. You know, but I will tell you this: the coaches that sent me the David Peraltas of the world, and the coaches that called me about Marcus Solbak—that's how I got Marcus as well. And you know, guys like that, I'll listen to. And not only will I listen to them, I'll call them and say, "Hey, what do you got? Who are you seeing?" Because most of the time, the best thing you can do is have a college coach or a professional independent league manager, whatever, recommend an opposing player. Because they don't have any, you know, need to recommend them. They're really recommending because they like them that much and they respect them.
All right, last question, and then we're going to close it off, and we'll be back with another show. Anything out there for players that you want to tell the players out there, to become a professional player? What do they need to do? Obviously, you've got to have some skills, but what do they need to do to get there?
And I get to ask this question a lot. Obviously, you players out there, you know that you got to be good. You know you got to be athletic. You know you got to be all those things. You got to have the five tools. And, you know, if you're a pitcher, you got to be able to have command and all that stuff, you know. But, you know, the biggest thing that we don't talk about enough, and you players need to realize, us scouts, we want to see you having fun. We want to see you loving the game. Not only respecting the game, running off the field, but laughing, enjoying yourself, you know, having fun out there. You know, one of the greatest things I can see is a pitcher struggling out there, and I'll see the shortstop. And I saw this from Dansby, you know, was our number one, Dansby Swanson, our number one draft pick. He was playing shortstop in Hillsboro, and he ran in, and he spoke to the pitcher, and he was making him laugh, you know, because the pitcher was obviously tense. He was having trouble locating. And you know what? I thought to myself, boy, that's a serious leadership skill right there. Yes. That impressed me. Oh. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, what you need to do is not lose the fact that you're playing a kid's game, you're enjoying it, you're loving it. Don't lose that love for the game, guys. Respect it, honor it every day, but never ever forget that it's fun.
Outstanding. I'll tell you what, I'm thinking right away when you said, I'm thinking Dominican, Venezuelan, you know, Latin players, boy, they when they play the game, they're having a great time playing it. So, Chris, I want to thank you so much. It's been a great weekend. This has been a great show. I know a lot of coaches and players and parents around the world are going to learn a lot from this. So on behalf of the Inside Pitch, I'd like to thank you. And if you got any final words, here they are.
No, I just want to personally thank you. And I want to say this. This podcast is amazing. I mean, these are the kinds of things that we need to continue to educate, the especially the players and parents and coaches in the United States. You know, I've said this many times. I think as a general whole, we don't do a very good job of educating our volunteer coaches in the United States. I think we need to do a better job. And you know what, guys? If you think you know everything, you don't. I've been in this game my whole life. I told a story the other day that I've never worked outside of this game. Okay, I've always worked in baseball one direction or the other. And what I will tell you is that I learn something new every day. Keep learning, keep having fun, and thank you.
Thank you, Chris. And listen, everybody around the world, all you coaches, parents, and players, we want to thank you for being on the show and listening to the show. We want to encourage you to continue to listen to the show, and you'll get a lot of tips. And we also have videos online that you can go to when you go to our website. I'll mention the website. But first of all, do us a favor and go to Twitter at Inside Pitch Show. Also on our Facebook page, facebook.com/InsidePitchShow. And don't forget our website where there's a lot of information at InsidePitchPodcast.com. Plus, listen, feel free to email me anytime you have a question, anything you want to say at peter@InsidePitchPodcast.com. If you have questions, even if you want to hear a specific guest, you know, let me know about that guest. We'll be glad to put them on the show. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, or any major podcast outlet and click subscribe. Leave us a 5-star rating and review, and that's really going to help us get the show out. Now remember, check out all our shows on Lineup Media Group for shows like Youth Baseball Talk and Let's Get It On. Check it out on lineupmediagroup.com. Please share our shows with all your friends on Facebook, Twitter, and by email. Any way you can spread the word would really help us. Remember, coaches, coaching education is the key to building the foundation of our sport, so keep getting smarter every day. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great coaching day. See you on the next show, and we are saying goodbye from Prague, Czech Republic, where we had the International Sports Group Coaching Clinic, where we had over 200 coaches. See you later on the next show.
This has been the Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo, a Lineup Media Group production. Get access to all of our podcasts like Youth Baseball Talk, You're on the Clock NFL, and Let's Get It On with famed MMA referee Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock, online at lineupmediagroup.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.